Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hello, I'm Michael Pavone. I'm the host of Fork Tales, and today we are joined by Peter Orlander, founder of Happy, a cannabis and mushroom beverage brand he's grown from the ground up into a fully vertically integrated operation from cultivation all the way to the finished product. We'll talk with Peter about building in a highly regulated industry, bootstrapping a brand in cannabis, earning consumer trust, and where cannabis and mushroom beverages fit in the broader food and beverage landscape. Peter, welcome to Fork Tales. Thanks again for joining us today.
Michael, glad to be here. Thanks for having me on. Excited to tell your listeners all about Happy.
Cool. So before we get into your journey, give us the big picture. What is Happy today and what are you building?
So Happy is a plant medicine company, right? We want to build, products that, are approachable and people enjoy consuming. You know, we want to give people a good, happy feeling. And I think we do that through kind of all our product lines.
That's awesome. Hence the name, right? Good branding. So take us back. You started, if I'm correct here, in private banking at JP Morgan. What made you want to get into the cannabis and mushroom beverage business?
Oof. That's a loaded question. But, when I was working at JP Morgan, it was a great introduction to just business owners and entrepreneurs mm-hmm. who had done things, had thought differently, had gone against the grain, and just, you know, I, as their banker, I spent a lot of time with them and developed some really great relationships. So I was able to, ask them some really deep questions, understand kind of why they were able to take risks, you know, what was different about their life and, you know, what they kind of saw to build these successful companies. And, you know, I realize that's a little bit of an outlier because I was dealing with people who had already done it and, been successful. So, you know, because not everybody, you know, who tries at it, you know, is successful. Yeah. But, you know, these gentlemen and women were very good at what they did and just very inspiring. So that kind of, you know, thought, you know, got my train of thought on there to say, hey, you know, where could I add some value, or what would I want to do if I could be my own boss, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's really what launched me into, you know, pursuing other avenues instead of the corporate world.
That's cool. So did you think, did you always feel like, hey, I'm going to be an entrepreneur? Or was one of these things you're like sitting there going, like, I'm talking to all these guys or these folks and they built these companies. I think I can do this, or maybe I should try this. I mean, was it something that was always in your DNA, or you think it's something you almost, you acquired over time?
No, I definitely acquired it over time because after that, you know, I did have a kind of a career journey where I tried some different industries. And, you know, at that point in time, I was like, you know what, you know, none of this is really making me happy. Mm-hmm. I need to, you know, have a little more ownership of this and, you know, I'm going to take a stab at this myself.
That's great. You know, I personally consider myself somewhat of a serial entrepreneur, and, but the reason or the caveat there is because I was never smart enough to know what I couldn't do. Right. So I always just assumed like, oh, hell, I can do that. And, you know, I try it, and I've started several different companies. Some were very successful, some not so much. And in fact, candidly, some of the things I've created, I feel had better opportunities than some of the ones that were successful, if that makes sense. So maybe there's a little luck involved, but it's just, I don't know. You got to like that game, that journey, you know, and it's cool.
You got to be afraid. You got to not be afraid to fail, and you got to be afraid to try, because you don't know until you try. And if you don't do it, you're always going to have that what if, like, well, what if I would have done that? Or, you know, how bad would that be if all of a sudden you had this great idea and then 5 years later, someone else that, you know, where you hear about did it and you're like, that was my idea. You know, it's like, don't let that happen. You know,
I got to tell you one other story. When my daughters were young, we were sitting in a restaurant and they were like, you know, whatever, 8 and 10, something like eight and 11. And I said, girls, I said, look around this restaurant. It's packed, right? She goes, they're like, yeah. I said, you see that? I said, everybody in this restaurant had an idea for a product or wanted to start a business at one point in their life. I said, you know how many people in this building did it? I said, there's probably 3 or 4 that are in here that have done it. I said, but everybody here, trust me, everyone said, I have an idea, or, oh, I should do this, you know, everyone. And I said, you gotta embark on those dreams. I mean, it's important. So anyway, I totally respect the whole gig and the, you know, which will bring me, I guess, into my next question. So, which I find ironic, you're an investment banker, you understand money, and you end up bootstrapping this business in a difficult industry where capital is so important. So why did you go the bootstrapping route?
Well, I mean, I didn't totally boost. I had some friends and family that helped me out a little bit, but not to the point where I was getting, you know, institutional funding. But, gotcha. You know, anytime you take on money from investor or institutional, I mean, you lose control, right? Mm-hmm. And in this industry, you know, it was very, you know, when I started in it, it still is. It's still kind of the Wild West. Like, there's a lot of things changing, a lot of unorthodox ways to go about doing business. And if you're always having to check with the board or check with this guy who's not involved in it day to day, I mean, you're at a supreme disadvantage. So, and it forces you to really do the work yourself. And if you don't know how to do the work yourself, like, how are you going to manage people doing the work? Right. Or how are you going to know who's, you know, pulling one over on you? So, you know, it's a blessing, and it'd be nice. It would have been a lot more comfortable to have a little cushion here and there, but, you know, it really forced me to, you know, get after it, grind a little bit more, and, you know, get really comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, that's very well said. I mean, cause you're right. And I personally deal with that all the time. I think about, do I take on some private equity? Do I take on an investor? Cause there's all kinds of opportunities out there. And I sort of always have not done that. You know, I just always been, we'll self fund. We've done it before. We've gotten this far. We'll just self fund. So, you know, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. I always just said I wasn't smart enough to use money wisely. So, you know what I mean? Like, I figured I better earn it and then spend it, because I'll probably pay more attention to it than if someone just gives it to me to use.
Well, I think it's smart to not use it until you really need it. Cause then, you know, you get to those, you know, plateaus in your business where you're like, all right, here's an opportunity that I'm going to need some support for. Right. And then I can really light this thing on fire. But until you get there, until you have the structure right, until you got the vision and the plan dialed in, like, you don't need anybody else trying to tell you to, you know, try this differently or do this quite yet until you're really ready to go after it.
Yeah. So when in this journey, when did you realize that, hey, I've got a scalable brand here, not just a product, not just a niche product, but I got something that can really be something.
I mean, I knew it early on because after banking, I went to go work with a consumer packaged goods company in the nutrition space, and we were distributing our product nationally. And that's really kind of what gave me, got my chops wet, my feet wet in formulation, understanding functional ingredients, understanding shelf life. Hey, this is, you know, what you're going to have to deal with in distribution. So, you know, it was a good education on that component of it. But, you know, I was always looking at it like, okay, I know the deal with this is you got to move volume, and in order, you know, you can't replicate yourself. How do I make a really good product? How do I be able to get it in consumers' hands and not worry about, you know, the quality, degradation over, you know, getting it from my spot into their hands.
Well, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, like, we at Quench, you know, all we do is food and beverage marketing, and candidly, until you put it in people's mouths, it doesn't matter. So, you know, and we got to get it past that whole thing, right? You got to get it in their hands, in their mouth, and then we have an opportunity to create a relationship. So I think that's really wise. But help me understand this now, because I unfortunately have not tried your product, and be very honest, but it's not just cannabis. You're also in the mushroom based beverages. Now, I see mushroom coffees and things like that. Are we talking about that? Or I also grew up in the 70s. So when I hear mushrooms, I hear cannabis, I totally understand that. So I don't know, where are we going here?
Yeah, no, it's more on the functional side, but yeah, okay. it's like I said, we're plant medicine. So I'm very into the natural functional ingredients, right? Something that has an effect. So our functional mushroom line is called the Fungi Fusion, and it has lion's mane, cordyceps, and reishi, right? So, and we did basically clinical doses in there, and it's very similar to, you know, the reasons people drink a mushroom coffee, but you know, people don't want to be sitting there stirring up a coffee, you know, midday or something like that, because it's more of a powdered product. So, you know, obviously there's a need for this. People like natural focus. They like, you know, energy without the caffeine, and, you know, grabbing a RTD, that actually tastes great with the same, we saw like a bunch of opportunity in the market and there wasn't too many people who had figured out how to not only do it with the right doses, but actually make it palatable. So, you know, that's where my experience came from of like, okay, well, I got the pieces of the puzzle here. And hey, you know, a lot of people in cannabis and they like mushrooms, they understand this and it's plant medicine. So it was kind of just a natural product extension. And it also helped us just market and grow the brand because we're not dealing with compliance issues, right? We're able to sell this on Amazon. We're in Total Wine and Beverage with this. We're in, you know, so it just opens a lot of doors to even say, hey, what else does Happy have? And oh, they do that too. So, you know, it's been a great line for us.
That's very cool. So what's the biggest misconception like with consumers? Like what do you, you know, when it comes to cannabis and mushroom beverages, what's the misconception you have to overcome?
Well, the biggest one with the cannabis, and we're hemp derived, right? So we can sell that everywhere. But I mean, the biggest one of that is, hey, I'm going to drink this and stare at a wall for 5 hours, or like, I'm just going to go right to bed. Like, I don't know. Not with ours. Right. So it's, and that's just monitoring dosages and making sure they're consistent. Cause at the end of the day, we want to give people a real good experience. We want them to enjoy themselves, enjoy the environment they're in, and, you know, not feel having any anxiety about, you know, carrying this can around and drinking it. Right. We want to normalize that component of it. And as far as the mushroom ones, they're like, oh, I don't like the taste of mushrooms, or it's not going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think they're pretty surprised when they try what we've put out. So we've gotten around that.
Very good. Well, so, okay. When you do this, then who, you know, we're a marketing company, marketing firm, who are you targeting? Are you targeting people who are already familiar with the cannabis or mushroom products, or is it sort of like just new users? We just want the curious folks to get into it, or is it both?
I mean, hey,
I want everybody, of course,
for everybody. It's a very approachable product. I think everybody can consume at least the mushroom line. I mean, my kids love the Fungi Fusion. That's more of a straight wellness product. Cause that's kind of my roots. That's where I come from. But as far as in the THC line, you know, I looked at it, I wanted to give people an alternative to drinking alcohol. I was never really a big drinker. It really banged me up the next day. Right. So, and you know, I just think the younger generations, and this is a very interesting, I was talking to someone about this the other day, the younger generations, it's not so cool to get out of control. You know, you want to be in control, but you still want to have a good time. Right. So you're looking at trends that they are way more accepting of cannabis and hemp and just that kind of natural thing. And then you have, you know, an older demographic too, that is like, has been beat down from drinking alcohol so long. And, you know, there's studies coming out about how it, you know, may cause cancer and how it's not very good for you. So there is a wellness trend happening throughout, you know, the country, and you can't not hear about it. Right. Yeah. So I think that has helped us. And then just, you know, as far as the mushroom drink, you know, functional beverages, if people are drinking, if they're going to spend extra money on something, they want some kind of function out of it, something that they, some kind of a feel factor. Right. And, you know, energy drinks are, you know, have a lot of stuff in them, including sugars and whatever. If we can give someone, you know, a similar effect without all of that in there in a more natural way, I think it's a great value proposition for people out there to just give it a try.
You make a really, really good point. You know, for, I think it's 17 years now at Quench and Vigor, that's our restaurant firm, we every year do annual food trends. So we've been studying trends, and we put out a national trend study and been picked up in Fast Company and national trades and news organizations. And the whole sort of like sober youth movement, the whole mocktail, the whole that became a thing. And again, a trend is something that you see early on and you see it heading in a direction. It's not something it's commonplace. And I remember the first time I saw that, and it was probably going back at least 5 years ago now, that it was a thing. I was really kind of surprised. I'm like, oh, this won't last long. But obviously, you know, as we sit here today, there's folks like you that they're creating brands around it. And it's very much, well, I'd actually say it's almost mainstream at this point. So you're right on the money with this, as far as, you know, people not wanting to drink a lot, not wanting to lose a younger demographic by and large, not wanting to lose control. And I think that's, I think it's very, very wise on your part. So, but on that note, is your playbook, I'll say, from marketing, is it like alcohol or is it completely different? Because you are regulated still, right? In some cases.
For the THC version, we are very heavily, like almost state by state.
Right.
You know, we're waiting on this November bill. Mm-hmm. Trump came through and passed something that actually I think will benefit everybody in the cannabis industry. But it's very interesting because we have a, you know, at first when I launched Happy, we did it just as a CBD brand, right? Mm-hmm. A CBD beverage. This was in 2019. And we were doing well with that. We were looking at getting into some retailers and then COVID happened and basically just took our legs out from underneath us. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, I was like, hey, look, we have people like the product we have. They like the brand. I think there's something going on here. So I went out to California and, you know, restarted with my connection out there. We bought a facility and just got real ingrained in the community. And I was like, okay, how can I make this, you know, more transparent or trustworthy? So like, if I'm going to consume it, I'm very particular about what I put in my body. And I think anybody who's going to put something in there that's a regulated product, they're like, hey, where did this come from? Is this good? Right. So it's like how I wanted to understand every bit about this in order for our, you know, and I, at that point in time, I didn't know if there was going to be a relaunch of it nationally with the hemp stuff. So it just kind of all worked out where it's like, hey, I was there for, you know, years getting the education, understanding the culture, understanding the farmers, understanding the soil, understanding the extraction, every component of it. So when we're coming to market now, I feel very well armed and, you know, to speak to, you know, the quality and what goes into it.
You said something earlier too, which I assumed when that's why I asked the question about, is it like the playbook of alcohol and because of the regulation? So each state's different. So how do you deal with that? I mean, you can't just do the same process state after state, because they're all different. I mean, how do you deal with that? You just like got to learn each one and figure out what your angle is, or not angle, but you know, where the white space is for your brand, or.
Yeah. Well, number one, you got to look at the sales. Like, are we going to sell this product? Right. And then like, where do we have friendlies where we can actually get some, you know, exposure and help on the ground? For example, we're in Louisiana. Louisiana's got a 5 milligram cap for any THC beverage. Right.
Gotcha.
And we're more of a lower dose product anyway, because we're that social kind of drink. We don't want to get someone just, you know, blast off. Right.
Yeah.
So
you're happy, not exuberant, right?
Exactly. Right. So we started with the fives. Right. And then, you know, we started looking across the country and then, you know, people just, hey, I want a little bit more, a little bit more. So we came out with our 10 milligram version and that's doing really well right now. What it's looking like is that that's going to be the national cap, when all the dust settles. And I think we're going to be comfortable with that. So it just, cool. I just looking at, you know, we do have people that help us out in Washington and are lobbying in certain states that we got some good exposure in. So, you know, we're picking our markets, we're picking, and that's really how we're driving our choices of, you know, dosages.
Totally tracks. So, you know, you've gotten into some grocery. That's, by and large, the holy grail. Like we talked to all kinds of food companies, let alone regulated ones. How did that happen? And you know, how did you land those first stores?
Relationships. I mean, they're regional, right? So we're getting in there, but you know, this functional space is growing. So there's interest in it. And we are, you know, there's not many, not as much competition in the functional mushroom space as there is in the THC space, right?
Right.
THC space, it's very crowded. You know, there are some grocery with that. We're not in grocery with our THC, but the functional mushroom, there was white space. You know, our brand is good. We got a good brand story and our product's good. So it's a good way for us to get on the shelves and, you know, earn that their customers' trust. And hey, we'll see what happens when the THC stuff, irons out.
Yeah. So now does the grocery, do they put you in like the health and wellness area or are you in with the mainstream beverages?
Well, it's interesting. So a couple have us in the mocktail section. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. Yep. And then some have us in kind of their functional space where like poppy is and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It rhymes with happy and hot and poppy, right? Just sit right next to them. That's great.
Excuse me.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's funny. That's very cool. Well, so we talked about regulations. You know, many cannabis companies, regardless of the THC, they're vertically integrated. You have control every step of the process. How has that shaped the way you built Happy?
Well, you have to, right? At least that's my perspective because, you know, unless you're so far out of the, you know, knowledge of how to get that product done, but especially in cannabis in California, there's so many pieces of that puzzle where people all have to get their cut and there's taxes on each single one. If you're vertically integrated, all right, do I have the bandwidth and capacity and the knowledge to do this? If you can, all right, really that's the only way you can make money, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is taxed heavily throughout the whole thing because of this, because of the tax laws. So, and it's the one way you can control, hey, how much supply am I going to have? What's my quality? If I get feedback on the product out there, do I know exactly where it came from, how to fix it, so it's not an issue the next time? Because, you know, once again, it's a regulated product and there's a lot of scrutiny on it. And you got to be very detailed about what you're putting out there for consumers.
Yeah, but that affects obviously capital expenditures too, right? If you're going to be vertically integrated, you can't just jumping dough to a co-packer, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and have them say, oh, just make this for me. Let's see how it goes. Cause that's, you know, a lot of startup CPG beverages and food. I mean, they do that, right? They have an idea, they have a formula, they send to a co-packer. We do a run, we get in some sales, if it grows, we may consider building our own, you know, vertical integration, but you had to do it right away. So that's a even bigger, I guess, commitment, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Bigger commitment. And then, but then I found better ways to do it as well. Right. So I'm, because of it, because of my, you know, entrepreneur mindset, I was like, okay, well, I see someone that out there that I like working with, that I've done business with. Okay, how can we bring this into more of a partnership where I do have, you know, I don't completely let my hands off the wheel, but I have the right help getting me to this next phase, right? So like there can be a win-win. And, you know, at first when I got into cannabis, everyone was like, hands off, you can't touch this, this is mine. But, you know, because of how difficult, you know, that market is and what people went through, you know, people started to understand like, hey, I got to find the right people to work with here and I got to find the right partnership or the right structure or we're all for a world of hurt.
Yeah. Well, and you are in the Wild West, right? So, you know, being with like-minded people that have figured things out or can help each other. I mean, in a way it helps the whole, for lack of a better word, category, you know? I mean, if you're the only one that exists, it's going to be really hard, right? I mean, even though it might seem good for market share, it's going to be really hard. So
all boats rise with the tide.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well said. So, all right, I'm going to jump into flavor a little bit. Flavor, branding, packaging. I mean, those are all things that we do a great deal around and about. They're super important for any brand. Talk about the role they play in getting someone to try a cannabis or a mushroom-based beverage for the first time.
Well, it's got to stand out on the shelves or else they're not going to pick it up. So number one, you know, I think people eat and drink with their eyes first. Like, oh, hey, that looks like something I might want to try, right? So it has to be approachable. It can't, you know, scare people. It has to tell people, you know, the exact flavor, you know, or give them, you know, kind of in their mind, like, hey, or kind of an emotional connection, right? So, and that's a little bit like, you know, I want people to, oh, this is happy. Okay, how do I feel? Like they're smiling when they say happy, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look at our logo, it looks like a sunburst, you know, a little bit coming out. So I wanted to be like, hey, there's some joy, there's some happy in this can. Give us a try. And it's bright colors, right? So it definitely stands out on the shelf. So
that's great.
That is first and foremost for any consumer package, right? Like, if it doesn't look like it's packaged well, or it looks like you didn't put a lot of time and effort into it, you probably didn't put a lot of time and effort into the product on the inside.
Yeah, you're nailing it too. And again, this is what we do. And we're just working on it's a potato company and they want to be branded. And, you know, that was my whole thing. It's like, it's got to be fun. It's got to be fanciful. Like, what's going to make you drawn to a potato? I mean, like, so, and in your case, I mean, you have a great name and I've seen the packaging. It's engaging and, you know, that's what you want. You're trying to project a vibe. And it's super important. You know, we did a campaign and we did research, a lot of research years ago. And there's a brand of beer from the Pennsylvania area called Yuengling. And, you know, we realized that this beer was, in a way, it was a calling card. Like guys, you know, and I'm not saying not just guys, but primarily it was a guy's beer. And, you know, they realized when they go to a bar and they have that in their hand, that's sort of like a marker. I drink Yuengling. And Yuengling stood for like a true blue, you know, hard work ethic, blue collar work ethic. You could be an attorney or you could be the guy driving a tractor trailer. You still drink it, but it said you were like, you know, wholesome, honest, you know, hardworking and good. Right. And it sounds kind of dumb to say that, but that's in a way, that's what we do as far as marketing. And that's what that stood for. And that's what we put behind it. And we put the heritage behind it and the integrity and all that. So when people have a can in their hand or a product or whatever, it is a reflection on who they are and whether they want to admit that or not. I mean, you know, if that wasn't the case, we'd all have the same automobile, you know, because all a car does is get you from one place to another. But everybody's got but most people have a preference, you know, and what they drive and why they drive it. It's a symbol of who you are. So, I mean, I think everything you've done, I think, is spot on and to be congratulated.
Thank you. I appreciate that. No, that's exactly what we set out to do. So we wanted to have that emotional response, right? We wanted people to feel good about feeling good.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, like, and again, you explained it pretty well here, but when you're marketing or in on the store shelf, you know, if people are, you know, how does this product fit in their life? I mean, do you want them, are your beverages competing more with the alcohol or functional drinks? Or is it just something entirely different? You know, I mean, are we really, and maybe it depends on where you are in the store, right? If you're in the functional section, that's who you're competing with. If you're in the next to the alcohol or whatever else, I guess that is it. And then, you know, you're next to Poppy in some cases, right? So that's just, you know, a beverage, right? So.
Yeah, no, I mean, the THC line is definitely competing for a different choice among the alcohol, right? Okay. And so that's going head to head with them. So that's where that shelf space is. The functional mushroom, yeah, it's a functional product. So, and it's very interesting with, you know, my sales team, when they're out there, they're like, well, we could put this here or we could put this here. Here's a set. We can put this, we can put it in the coolers here. So, and the retailers like it because if they do like the brand, but you know, shelf space is a premium. It's hard to get on shelves at times because that's their real estate. Right. Mm-hmm. But if they like the brand, okay. Maybe it'll fit here. Maybe we have a space here. We can get you in here. And, you know, I think consumers are really going to like it. So it's almost like it's a good two-pronged approach is how it's kind of worked out for us. I mean, I wish I could say I was smart enough to plan it that way, but I was just like, oh no, man, like I like functional ingredients. This is an easier way. This is for the functional mushroom. Like, I want my kids to be proud that I can do this. I want them to be able to drink this, you know, and not worry about it too. So, you know, there's a couple of reasons I came out with it, but it just kind of, you know, it just happened to be that now it fits well and it's aligning really well with the functional wellness trends.
Yeah. That's awesome. Cause it is two different sort of things here, right? I mean, you know, the functional side and then the THC side. I mean, it is in two different areas, kind of like to your point, you know, one's regulated, one's not. So you're kind of in an interesting place.
Yeah. I mean, yes, they're two different, but I still think they're both wellness products. If you look at it, I mean, if you look at the research behind cannabis, I mean, now with, you know, these laws going out and they're going to release these studies, like everyone's heard stories about, oh, it helps me sleep. It helps my knee. It helps my mental anxiety. It helps me take a mental break. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then functional mushrooms, there's a lot more information on how lion's mane helps mental clarity and focus. There's a lot more on how cordyceps helps your immune system and lung health. There's a lot more on reishi about, you know, regulating hormonal balance and stuff like that. Like, so that's real, like, but they all have this effect on your body. So they're still two functional ingredients that at the end of the day, they are wellness products and they're wellness functional ingredients. It's just public perception of, oh, this was illegal for so long, so it must be bad for you. Well, right. I don't really agree with that, but you know, it's to each their own. Try it yourself.
Well, and to your point, if the regulations can change, they can merge together and you've got sort of maybe even both sides of the spectrum and you can bring it together. So, you know, that's huge. So, I mean, as far as trends, we talked about like the trends I saw. What are you seeing right now that you're excited about in this category?
Well, in the functional mushroom space, I'm excited because it's, I'm just excited people are talking about it more.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. Yeah. Like it's, I've got a lot of friends in the THC space and they're all like, okay, well, we don't know what's going to happen with these laws. We have to, you know, expand our thinking or expand our lines. Like what are the other products? And, you know, a lot of the people who are in the THC world, like they are very, into natural products, right? So I think it's exciting that, you know, when I went through the 80s and the 90s and, you know, the 2000s when I grew up and stuff, it was like, hey, sugar and caffeine and all this stuff. And like, okay, well, you know, there are other ways to get those effects that aren't as hard on your body, that don't have those lingering effects. And I think people are very creative that are making brands and entrepreneurs because you have to be, you have to stand out or do something different. And they're trying new things in a different way, but they're keeping in mind that the consumers now, they want something that at least they think is good for them. And if you can give them something that they think is good for them, that actually is good for them, you know what?
Win-win.
That's the workaround.
Yeah. So I imagine you've done this, but have you gone to like Expo West or Fancy Food or any of those shows? Have you checked any of those out?
I haven't displayed there yet at any of those yet, but you know, it's on the radar to do here over the next 18 months.
Yeah. And then, well, whether you display or not, it's just such a incubator for entrepreneurs and just what's out there and trends and all that. It's always fascinating. I didn't go last year to Expo. I was there the year before. I didn't go this year. I went last year and everything was water, something with water. Water was like a thing. Like, I mean, there's water everywhere, water, you know, couldn't get enough hydration and it was water that had water additives, you know, but you know, from the beverage side, it was just huge. And look, there's a lot of money out there, as you well know, that's looking at this stuff, right? I mean, you know, we read all the studies about alcohol sales being down and, you know, these big companies are always looking for the next things, you know, and how do they expand their portfolios? So, you know, there's a lot of people out there like yourself that are building really smart concepts. And I think it's really fascinating to me. Fascinating. So,
yeah, thanks.
So I have this one last question. Ready? And maybe that was the nice intro music that you had there. So if you had one final meal, what would you eat and why?
Oh, I love a good T-bone steak. Actually, no, take that back. If I get a prime, like a ribeye,
there you go.
But I like it. It's got to be cooked really well. I think that and some good mashed potato. I'm old school. I'm a Midwest boy, right? So I think that is good. But sous vide and then charred on the outside.
Fantastic. Well done. Well, hey, since you said sous vide, I'd be remiss if I didn't do a little promotion for one of my clients is Cuisine Solutions. And if you don't know that brand, check them out. The way you'll know the most is if you ever go into a Starbucks and eat an egg bite, that's all of their product. Those egg bites are all sous vide and it's all their product. But they do a product of with meat, with like ribeyes, and it's sous vide. So it's just absolutely phenomenal. So it's just a sear and serve product and it always comes out perfect. So if you like that, I got to throw that out there. So, but I'm with you. And I'm glad you changed from T-bone to ribeye because that's like a thing. You know,
yeah.
I know I'm going to die, whatever, several days earlier than I would have if I wouldn't have eaten so many ribeyes, but I'm going to be okay with it on my deathbed. I'm going to sit back and say, you know what, another 8 days and to give up all those ribeyes. No, I take the ribeyes. So
yeah, the ribeye. And the reason I say T-bone is because I got my dog and I love him. And I think I just like to give him, the bone at the end. So he gets a little flavor too.
I respect that. What kind of dog?
He's a boxer.
Oh, very cool. I'm a big bulldog guy. I've always had bulldogs, and I've got this thing with my bulldog where when we go to my place in the mountains, she loves it there because it's a cool place. But I think she really loves it there because when we go there, she eats what I eat. So she eats elk steaks, she eats elk burgers, like whatever I eat that night is what is on her plate.
And that's a happy dog right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably not the right, the most healthy thing in the world, but it's all protein. So I figure I write it off. So, well, hey, Pete, I want to tell you, I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much. Congratulations on your success and on what I think is conceptually a really smart brand.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me on. A great conversation, and let's do it again.
Cool. Sounds like a plan. Thanks.